Hello and welcome once again to the MJA podcast. My name's Kate Swanell. Today we're going to be chatting to Samantha Edmonds, who is the National Project Manager of Silver Rainbow, which is part of the National LGBTI Health Alliance. Yes, it's true, despite the youthful image of the LGBTI community, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex people do grow older, and they have a unique set of needs in aged care. Samantha is going to talk with us about those needs and how aged care providers are learning to be more inclusive. First of all, tell us about the Silver Rainbow.
Silver Rainbow was initially funded in 2012 under the then Department of Health and Ageing in response to the reforms that came out from the Productivity Commission and the aged care reforms and the development of the National LGBTI Ageing and Aged Care Strategy. So we were funded back then to deliver training across Australia to aged care workers, and we do that through partners in every state and territory, and also to sort of assist in the rollout of the national strategy. That strategy ended in 2017, and we've been continued to be funded for another 3 years, and that work continues the rollout of the training, which we're currently updating and reviewing and tying in with all the changes within aged care, so yeah. It's much more relevant and practical, and also expanding, because we've got a lot of feedback, people were wanting particular information about each of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and intersex rather than that sort of general
yes.
across group stuff. So that's what we're looking at the moment. And the other part of the Silver Rainbow does sort of national coordination, representation. We sit on lots of government committees and provide lots of advice, review policies. So anything that's about making aged care inclusive and representing the voices of LGBTI elders and older people and engaging with those people and making sure they're heard. So one of our key bits of work at the moment is I chair the Aged Care Sector Committee Diversity Subgroup, and that group created the diversity framework last year, which is a broad cross-diversity framework, high level, and we're just in the process now of finalising 3 action plans under that framework. So obviously at the Alliance we're working on the LGBTI aged care action plan, so that's sort of a key piece of work that's ongoing at the moment.
What defines an LGBTI elder or older person? Is there an age bracket that you particularly aim at?
We take the general sort of Department of Health or government target, which is 65 plus for the general population and 50 plus for the Aboriginal population.
What is the evidence about LGBTI elders in terms of their health compared with their peers, their non-LGBTI peers?
There's lots of research, certainly more research is starting to come out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot more research internationally, though that is growing in Australia. And what that tends to show is there's higher rates of mental health and mental illness, and that's not because the person is lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex. It's the experiences of discrimination, exclusion, abuse, violence that obviously then results in increased mental health concerns and mental health issues. We know that there's, you know, higher rates of drug use and smoking and alcohol use. And again, it's not because of who the person is. It's because of the experiences over their lifetime. You know, we all have different ways to try and cope with those experiences.
Yeah.
And obviously for a lot of ageing gay men, it's living with HIV. So we've got our first ever population ageing with HIV starting to get up to an age where they are going to be looking at aged care and wanting to access aged care services. There's certain comorbidities and issues around that providers, aged care providers are going to need to know about and be aware of. And the same with intersex people and transgender people. There's not a lot of knowledge about long-term hormone replacement therapy and what that means and what the implications of that could result in. So there's sort of new health issues that are going to arise that we're going to start to become aware of and need to learn about. And then we've got this sort of quite a field of academic research looking at what we know so far in terms of health and wellbeing.
You open up your MJA article by talking about invisibility. You know, older people always tell you, particularly older women will always tell you, that they become invisible at a certain age. How is that reflected in the LGBTI community, and why is invisibility so entrenched?
There is that pure generational thing that as people age, we tend not to see them as part of society. And, you know, there is that tendency to see sort of see society as a very young society, and certainly within the LGBTI communities, it's seen as a very young community. Yes. So it's not recognising that there's people that have, you know, lived their whole lives and a whole range of experiences and actually have fought the battles so that young people can be where we are today. But there's also layering over that for most of our elders and older people is, you know, they've grown up in a time when they were excluded, that they lost their jobs, they could be sent off to get treated, they could lose their families.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have the rights that many of us enjoy today. And so, it, you know, you learn to hide yourself. You learn to just blend in with the community. You're expected to marry, expected to have children, so that's what you did. And that that treatment was then sort of perpetuated by the very services we're now saying you have to access. So government, aged care services, health services, any of those services. And we're saying, no, no, you can trust them now, it's okay, but you spent your whole life not trusting them. And then, you know, when people get into aged care, well, I mean, there's a number of reasons, but firstly, unless the aged care provider is very aware and very across the issues and has put things in place so that they can see, so that the person entering the service can see that they're actually included and recognised. And there's not a lot of that. So, you know, you're going to a service and you don't even know how they're going to react to you, how they're going to treat you, you know, are you just going to continue to experience what you've experienced? And then you're also being asked to live with the very people that have possibly abused you throughout your whole life as well. So the other residents are your peers and they're the ones that excluded you at the same time. So what we find, and I'm sure you've sort of heard this, is people going back into the closet. So going back to hiding who they were and pretending not to be who they are, so not showing affection to their partners and sort of maintaining that it's just a friend rather than a partner, or not even discussing what their particular health needs might be for being LGBT or I, and trying to blend back in again.
Nightmare.
Yeah, absolutely. Just add, and it's not to say that there aren't some really resilient and strong LGBTI people that are, you know, are out there and quite confident, but it's recognising that overall it's that sort of that's the common experience.
Is there ageism within the LGBTI community itself?
Yes, there is. I mean, like within the general community, there is that, you know, youth culture.
Yeah.
You know, that youth focus. I think it does seem to be changing. There does seem to be that recognition of elders and older people. And I think that's because our elders and older people are actually being much more front and centre and starting, you know, we've got movies about their life experiences. We see what they've done. There's a bit more discussion in pink media. So I think people are becoming more aware of what's going on. But just like general community, there is that we're all young and that's the way it is kind of thing.
As Hannah Gadsby so nicely put it, we don't all express ourselves via the metaphor of party.
Yep, that's it.
Talk to me about the 2012 National LGBTI Ageing and Aged Care Strategy. What effect has that had in terms of what choices are available and how providers are expected to behave towards LGBTI people?
The strategy was developed out of, the first ever national roundtable on LGBTI ageing and aged care, and one of the recommendations from that was the creation of the strategy. So that was developed, so the Alliance, working with Department of Health, developed that strategy over about 3 or 4 months, and in obviously with intense consultation with LGBTI people and organisations and aged care providers. And we evaluated it last year, and we've, you know, certainly there is a change. There's obviously more to do, and it was quite interesting that when we did the evaluation, and the evaluation was only of a very small section of responses, so we can't sort of necessarily say broadly, but when we did evaluate it, it was providers felt that they were doing much better, but people didn't think necessarily that they were doing much better.
Right.
So it was an interesting kind of difference in how people saw the effect of the strategy. But certainly We've seen some providers going for the rainbow tick, the LGBTI accreditation, and actually making a concerted effort to do that. Other providers have started to build LGBTI-specific aged care facilities. Certainly training rolled out. I think we trained over 9,000 people.
Wow.
So that's sort of, you know, that's right across Australia. So it's, you know, everyone's getting an awareness. And certainly, look, when we first started rolling out the training, it was, oh, but we don't have any of those people here. And now we might hear it occasionally, but not very often. So people are have started to get that recognition. And certainly in a lot of the work that's currently going on, there is that recognition that, you know, we need to consider this, the group of people who are LGBTI, and how do we do that? And, you know, we get quite a lot of contact from providers, you know, either looking for further training or looking for assistance with policies and procedures, mm-hmm. or, you know, anything, you know, what can we do, and how can we be more inclusive? So, you know, it is like turning the Titanic. It's a slow, slow, steady turn, but,
yes.
You know, it is changing and it is getting better. And I think it's just, you know, the more we keep doing and keep being there and part of the discussions and part of the processes around aged care and all the reforms, it'll certainly change. And I think the strategy has definitely led to that, because we've seen lots of, you know, there's a community visitors program for isolated older people. So there's now an LGBTI-specific part of that on the East Coast. So,
right.
You know, there's recognition that there are particular needs and particular issues, and that these are best addressed by actually having specific services. So I think, yeah, we've seen change, and it's continuing to change, and we're not there, but it's slowly happening.
I'm chatting today with Samantha Edmonds from Silver Rainbow, and we're talking aged care for the LGBTI community. Samantha's co-authored perspective can be found at mja.com.au. What do providers have to do when they become aware that they have a member of the community in their care, in terms of allowances for family carers or non-family carers, and those kinds of things? Is it a smooth process now? Because it used to be pretty difficult to get non-related, non-blood relatives in to make the decisions and care.
Again, it's mixed, but I think providers are much more aware of, you know, what we call families of choice, and recognising partners. And certainly, you know, for those couples that are married, the changes last year will certainly make that much more a much easier process. There does seem to be that greater recognition. I mean, we still hear stories where, you know, the biological or blood family steps in to the exclusion of the partner or the family of choice, but that doesn't seem to happen as much, and there's certainly providers seem to have that recognition that, hey, we've got to be aware there's a broader group of people now. And we've done some work with Palliative Care Australia around that, and Dementia Australia's also done a lot of work around that. So I think, you know, there's all these different voices saying you've got to think about the partner, the family of choice, and having processes in place for that. But it's also, you know, doing a lot of work with LGBTI elders themselves and saying you need to make sure you've got your documentation in place, so people know, you know, your guardianship or
your advanced care plan, all of that
stuff. Advanced care plan, power of attorney, all those things, you know, make sure you've got those in place so that there aren't any problems later on, so people can speak for you. So it's sort of the two-edged sword there, that providers need to have that awareness, but also we need to make sure that everyone else has got the documentation they need as well.
How are the faith-based providers going with all this?
Look, it's certainly a mixed response. As you'd know, that under the changes to the Sex Discrimination Act, they're not allowed to discriminate in providing services to LGBTI older people. We have providers like Uniting who have got the rainbow tick and sort of gone all the way. And, you know, there are other providers that are still, oh, but, you know, we'll be fine, we'll treat them well, but it's more than that. It's how are you promoting yourself? How are you being inclusive, especially as for a lot of people, you know, their discrimination came from faith-based organisations.
Yes.
You know, there's big hurdles to still get over there. And also that recognition that, there are LGBTI people who are people of faith, yeah. and they do want to be in a facility or a provider that's, or receive services from a provider who is their own faith. So it is mixed, and I think we kind of hear that people, the providers, want to do the right thing, but not necessarily they haven't taken all those extra steps that need to happen.
Yeah. Dementia, you mentioned it earlier. Are there some special problems about dementia for people with LGBTI, particularly the ones who remain in the closet in their older years? Are there special concerns there?
Yeah, there are. There's there's a range of issues. We used to hear, oh, the person's becoming lesbian or gay or bisexual because of their dementia. And it's like, well, no, the person's always been whatever their sexuality or gender identity or intersex status is. But, the dementia removes that ability to vet yourself. So yes. where you might have been able to protect yourself your whole life, you're suddenly losing that ability to hide who you are. Yeah. And that choice to disclose is taken away, and suddenly you're disclosing without the control over that of who's hearing and who knows. So there's certainly issues around that providers need to be aware of. We have heard from some people working with transgender folks where the person may revert back to their previous gender, and that doesn't always happen, and it's certainly not a common thing, but, it's about working with that person where they're at. So
yes.
not
yeah.
just working with them, and obviously providing support to their partner, because if their partner knows them as a particular gender and for whatever reason in their dementia journey they're starting to think of themselves in their prior gender, so obviously there's support needed for the partner in, coping with that. And just supporting the person, as we say, just supporting them where they're at. And for other transgender people, maybe, they haven't let anyone know, and again, it's that unintentional yeah. disclosure, and the same with intersex. The other issues are around, and I think the biggest fears is around going back and reliving traumatic experiences. Mm. Question we get asked is, what happens if I develop dementia and I go back to a time where I was abused or victimised or, mistreated, and I have to keep reliving that moment? So again, it's about having really good care in place and understanding of, people's lives, and that traumatic experiences are just a big part of many LGBTI people's lives, and, yeah. you've got to have the experience and the skills and the qualified staff there to provide the right support.
Yeah. Do you have in your head a picture of an ideal aged care world? and what does that look like? What does that ideal world look like for LGBTI people?
Oh, that's a nutty question. Yeah. To me, the ideal world would be options. It would be that no matter where the LGBTI older person or elder lived, that they would have access to a safe and inclusive service, whether that's just a general service, because some people want general services, some want specific, some want wings.
Yep.
So whatever that is, but that, that providers have good practice and policy in place, their staff are skilled and trained, they're open about their inclusiveness, that from the moment that person walks through the front door, they feel safe, they feel included, they feel welcomed, and that actually I think Uniting, one of the staff from Uniting said it beautifully, is that the service comes out so the person doesn't have to. So they can walk Aww. Through your door, but they don't have to say, this is, I happen to be gay or lesbian, whatever it is. Like, that might come out over time, but the service is inclusive regardless.
Don't we all just want that?
Yeah, it would be lovely.
Wouldn't it just? Thanks, Sam, so much for your time.
No worries, Kate. Thank you so much.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.